This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that changed their lives. Because we all know certain songs have magical soul-changing properties. And those are the songs we want to hear about. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and in this episode of This Song, we'll be talking to two artists, Ian Astbury of The Cult and Austin singer-songwriter P.T. Banks, both of whom talked about songs that deal with more complex existential themes than, say, your average run-of-the-mill pop song. And spoiler alert, we end up talking about death a lot, just FYI. First up, Ian Astbury. He is the lead singer of The Cult and has co-written most of The Cult songs along with Billy Duffy. In fact, they co-wrote all the songs on The Cult's new record, which was just released. It's called Hidden City. I spoke to him by phone right before the release of the record, and he knew exactly what song he wanted to talk about. So here he is, Ian Astbury.
Life on Mars, David Bowie.
Life on Mars, David Bowie. That was a quick response.
It's easy for me.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mummy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view.
Well, do you remember how old you were when you heard it, or like the first time that you heard it?
Oh, yeah. I was 10 year old. I bought my records at Woolworths. And it's £25, and that's the first thing I ever bought. I still own it. It's been like a talisman. And right there and then, I played that record over and over. I can't tell you how many times I've listened to it.
I was going to say, I mean, do you remember what it was about that song that made you want to spend your first, you know, 25 pence to go out and seek it out and buy it at Woolworths?
Life on Mars was just so, it felt in some way otherworldly compared to the other music that was being made. The rest of it is kind of bubblegum in some ways. It was just kind of, it felt, I don't mean pedestrian, but kind of commonplace. Whereas Bowie's music felt to me otherworldly. It impacted me and made me feel apart from other kids at school who were into, you know, straight up music that was almost on a certain plateau or a certain plane. Bowie's music, for me, at least Life on Mars, it kind of is this... At 10-year-old, I wouldn't have been known what existential meant.
Right.
But that was the feeling, otherworldly, apart from, out of body, something other than this body that I was walking around in, something else going on out there or in there, the way it made me feel. I mean, the atmosphere of that record, the lyrics, the question, is the life on Mars? What a question to ask at that time. And we just recently had the Apollo programs, you know, going to the moon. So this was something new in our culture.
Is there life on Mars?
He looked completely different than all the... Like, most of the guys at that time looked like dudes with makeup on.
Right.
He looked like... he's androgynous. And that also was... really drew me in, was the way he looked.
Kind of that he actually was like on, you couldn't tell. My husband has a story about seeing like the back of a magazine cover, and it said like, David Bowie is really a girl or something. Like at that time, it was very, his androgyny was very like, it wasn't in the cultural, it wasn't in mainstream culture like at all. He was the first.
Yeah, no. I mean, Jagger had that, but Jagger had was more of a preening peacock.
Mm-hmm.
Bowie wasn't like that. Bowie was more, he wasn't cavalier. He was really present. He was fully in that persona. It was authentic in a way. He wasn't trying to do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
He was just very present. Eventually, we played with him, and we opened for David and the Glass Spiders tour.
Wow.
In Paris, like, what, 87 or something?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a young musician. I'm 24 years old. And he watched the show, and I went back to meet him after our show. I was called into the dressing room. We spent about an hour with him talking to him. And it was the first time I'd actually met an artist who I was worshipped. There's no other word for it.
Right.
I worship this man. And for him to treat me as an equal, and to, the way he spoke was like, he was very, just completely present and grounded and inquisitive and warm and
mm-hmm.
witty and engaging and, you know, took a real interest in who I was and what I was trying to do as a young person. And it's the first time I kind of felt, you know, I don't know, maybe the word anointed is a bit too, you know, I mean, I know there's Bowie devotees who are like, what? You know, because he's so sacred to so many people. But, I, you know, for me too, it rite of passage. I mean, I grew up with those records. I bought everything from that period since I was 10 to Black Star. They
wow.
formed my interior life. It drove me to, we recorded at Hansa Studio in 1984, purely because that's where they recorded.
You know,
that's where they made those records.
Dolphins can swim. Though nothing, nothing will keep us together. We can beat them forever and ever. Oh, we can be heroes.
His music was always a constant for me, and it might not be as evident in the cult's music,
mm-hmm.
but if you listen, you'll hear definitely an influence. And things, David was moving through so many different periods as well. You know, Life on Mars was like this existential piano ballad. It's almost like a theatrical piece. But then again, it was more, it was kind of had a you know, it's very cinematic as well. And then you would take us to Black Star, which is, you know, talking about what's beyond the veil.
On the day of execution, on the day of execution, only women kneel and smile.
Yeah, hugely impactful, hugely impactful. And there's been other music throughout my life at a certain stage, you know, definitely the Sex Pistols, Joy Division, you know, discovering 60s and 70s psychedelic rock and hard rock, for example. But Bowie, without a doubt, is probably the most impactful.
It's on America's tortured brow that Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again.
See, I mean, I'm in my house, we mourn. I couldn't stop crying for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Never mind. I was undone for 4 days. I couldn't move off my couch. I was like destroyed. I was destroyed, you know. And it's like, it's amazing how many people he's affected. And still, it's like this. It still doesn't feel coming to terms with it that he's no longer in our world. But we have this incredible body of work from him and. You know, you get me talking about Bowie. I could talk about Bowie for hours.
I wish we had hours. I would totally talk to you about Bowie for hours. And
yeah, you know, but everybody wants to talk about it as well. I did something just for Consequence of Sound, which just came out today. It's like, is the life after David Bowie? With Ian Asprey, which is pretty much like, you know, you got a new album coming out. Yeah, great. But let's talk about David Robbie Jones.
Come on. We really got a good thing going. Think we're gonna make it, better hang on to-
When you come to South by Southwest on March 18th, is the cult, like, are you guys going to do any Bowie songs as part of your sets? I mean, has that ever been something that you've done where you've, like, we're actually going to take our shot at Life on Mars or do something like that just as a way to, like, commune with his work?
I could sing it. I could do all of it. I would do all of it. I'd just probably leave and do, you know, go and play. I mean, I'm so gutted I never got to see Lazarus.
Yeah.
I thought Michael C. Hall did an amazing job. On the Colbert, I think it was on Colbert. Look at me, I'm in heaven. What?
I know.
He crushed it.
Yeah.
What a lyric. Opening lyric.
Look up here, I'm in heaven. I've got scars that can't be seen. I've got drama, can't be stolen. Everybody knows me now.
Bowie has always had this ability to go and explore topics that no one else really would touch, you know, like in mainstream pop music. And he did it up until the very end. He talked about, you know, death and dying and things that, like, no one even talks about, you know. He made an entire album about and what's beyond the veil. It's he just did it up to the end, which was amazing.
Something sadly lacking in our culture was, like, a lack of respect for death.
Yeah.
The fact there is banality. I mean, you know, people that know me know that, you know, I've got a love affair with Tibetan Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, indigenous cultures. And in all those cultures, they recognize death as it's a truism. It's a finite point. It's not something to be mournful about. We're all going to, our bodies will transform at some point. It's like the question is when. And if our lives are about the acquisition of material goods, then we're going to miss out.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to miss out on the experiences. And the beautiful thing about Bowie is throughout his music, he's saying, look, go and immerse yourself in experiences, travel, read, have these experiences, have these relationships. Fall in love, have your heart broken, go to the Himalayas, consider existential ideas, look at French philosophy, you know, and try everything that's on the buffet, have a little taste of it. Become informed, then you can really be free.
In the field of the Lord, I forgive myself. With you, forever with you, all stars and dust, protect yourself, the truth.
And below me, you can hear Hinterland by The Cult off their new record, Hidden City. And man, hearing Ian Astbury talk about David Bowie, like, yes to that. I wasn't lying. I could have talked with him about Bowie for hours, because it's like he said, everyone wants to talk about David Bowie, almost as if in death he made the entire world re-examine his catalog and realize what an impact his work had on all of us. Thank you, David Bowie. Speaking of Hidden City, The Cult is most likely coming to a city near you. They'll be at South by Southwest on March 18th at ACL Live at the Moody Theater, and then they'll be heading out on a tour of the U.S. I'll post a link to their tour schedule, as well as links to videos for Hinterland, Deeply Ordered Chaos, and Dark Energy, all off the new record, on the This Song page for this episode. Before I go any further, I'd like to ask that if you like hearing stories of songs that change people's lives, then please head over to iTunes and leave a rating or a review for our FAIR podcast. It really helps us. It helps us know that people are listening and what they're thinking, and it helps us get recognized amidst the vast landscape of iTunes. And while you're there, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, and that way you can get next week's episode featuring Jonathan Myberg of Shearwater, along with the Austin band Cross Record, delivered right to you. Next up, P.T. Banks. He's an Austin artist who just released a record called Moonlight is Sunlight, and he has an incredible voice, quite frankly. He came in to KUTX to do a live Studio 1A session, and afterwards, he sat down with me to talk about one song that affected him as a young college student and is still impacting him today. So here he is, P.T. Banks.
Well, I was going to talk about Everything Put Together Falls Apart by Paul Simon. It's from his first solo record.
Ooh, spare your heart. Everything put together sooner or later falls apart and there's nothing to it.
When I first heard it, I was just totally floored by just I melodically and musically how interesting it was and how clever it was. And then at the same time, the lyrics just kind of like hit me really hard about, and they're just sort of just about not trying to cover your problems with BS, you know?
Yeah.
And just like the hard truth. And there's stuff about, there's hints that it's about substance abuse and stuff like that, but it's also just kind of about everything. So.
Do you remember how old you were when you heard it for the first time?
Like, I think I was in college. During my like huge like musical discovery stage when I was like in my late teens, early 20s, where I was just like pretty much only listening to like 60s and 70s artists because I was like, what is all this stuff that I missed? Like my parents didn't really, my parents were like classical musicians and we didn't really, like we just listened to like gospel music and classical music mostly. And like they didn't have like a bunch of Beatles records and stuff. So when I was younger, or when I was like college age, is when I like found like all my favorite artists that are not my favorite, but they're from my parents' generation. So that's kind of funny.
And did you just listen to classical and gospel, or did you also listen to like the radio?
I listened to the radio and stuff. Yeah. Like I bought like Stone Temple Pilots CD. You know, like,
yeah.
I had an older sister who was like the cool high school girl, and I was like in middle school, so I would like listen to her like CDs and like Boys to Men. Nirvana. Like, just everything. I mean, I know all this stuff, yeah. But, I didn't listen to any other decades.
Right.
You know?
It was either, like, 200 years ago or the 90s.
Exactly.
That was it.
Yeah,
that was
exactly.
All you had.
Or, like, this week, yeah.
Yeah, totally. So when you went off to college, was it, like, your roommate's record collection that you got you hip to it? Or was it just kind of...
It was...
Like, going into someone's room and seeing a Led Zeppelin poster and being like...
It was like...
What's up with that?
It was like I was already like writing songs I started writing songs in high school, but like I was just like, I was just talking to people really. Like I had a friend who used to play in my band, Paul Blinks and the Carousels, for years, and I met him like in the dorm, and we like play guitars all the time, and he had like this huge extensive encyclopedic knowledge of like classic rock and roll and like all this stuff. So it's like him and just friends and like just other musicians I would meet.
Well, and probably a lot of those people had heard it from their like parents.
Or like uncle or something.
But you had this really neat experience.
My parents were super cool too.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Not in the rock and roll. Yeah.
But in a way they gave you this gift. Cause like mm-hmm. if you had been hearing, you know, this music since you were a kid, it may have just like washed over you, or you may have even rebelled against it.
Been like, the Beatles are stupid. I only listen to Nine Inch Nails, Mom.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But like you actually got to hear it like with young adult ears. Like none of it was a given.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, this is my parents'
old
music.
Yeah, like when I discovered like all the Beatles albums, it was like, I had never heard them, you know, like it was like they were brand new to me.
At like 18.
And I was like, freaking out, you know, like when I like the backside of Abbey Road, I was just like, oh my gosh, they're going to these places that like
what
I never dreamed of.
Doing here?
Yeah.
it was this Paul Simon song was like part of this like kind of mass awakening that you had around music.
Yeah, it was in that young adult time. And I mean, the song specifically is like, it's just about being honest with yourself. And I mean, it's really short. It's also like super minimal production. Like the song just speaks for itself, which that whole album is kind of like that, which I thought I just really liked, especially at the time. How he did so much with like just a guitar and a few things around it, but it wasn't like some little folk song. It was like this huge thing, but it's like super short and really concise, like stating what he's saying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but with like this really creative melody too, and like he says, like paraphernalia never hides your broken bones is the opening line.
Paraphernalia never hides your broken bones, and I don't know why you'd want to try. It's plain to see you're on your own.
And I was just like, oh my God, like,
how
I don't
do you
know
even come up with that? Yeah,
well, and just like, I mean, it made me, I mean, the song still like speaks to me like all the time, like just in a really, outside of just me thinking it's a cool musically and stuff, just like it's good advice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I actually allude to it on one of the songs on my record in the climax of the song. I sort of paraphrase kind of some stuff that he said in that song. It's like if you knew this song really well and then heard my song, you'd be like, oh, he's like giving a nod to that Paul Simon song.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, has that been something since you heard that song and you heard what Paul Simon was able to do, which was like, it sounds like it was a couple things for you, which was like musically, it was this really concise way to state something, but also what he was saying, mm-hmm. you know, just like apart from everything else, spoke to you in a way like something you needed to hear at the time or continue to need to hear.
Yeah, totally. Like more now than, I mean, more later in adulthood than then. Like, I mean, like he says, watch what you're doing, taking down, skid off to sleep and ups to start you on your way. After a while, they'll change your style. I see it happening every day.
Watch what you're doing, taking downs. To get off to sleep and ups to start you on your way. After a while, they'll change your style. I see it happening every day.
And like, that's the part that I allude to in my song.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I change it and add this other thing about like, you don't need ups, you don't need downs, you got me.
Yeah.
Like super poppy, like, but it's just like, and that was a song I wrote for a friend who like, who attempted to take his own life a few years ago. And, it's like this lullaby and anyway, so I don't know, that Paul Simon song has a lot. I mean, I can get really emotional, but I'm not going to go there.
Well, I think like too, it's kind of theoretical when you're, I mean, for most people, it's kind of a theoretical thing when you're that age. And then when you see people
later,
actually taken down
by it, you're
like, I know
exactly what he's talking about, you know?
Yeah.
So the context changes, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But so it's a beautiful song. It's also really depressing at the end, but like I have ways of taking it to mean that in the end is just like, you're going to die. The last line of the song is just like, when it's done, the police come and they lay you down for dead. Just remember what I said.
You can lie for all the good it'll do. Yeah, you can die. But when it's done, the police come and they lay you down for dead. Ooh, just remember what I said.
Like, that's going to happen, you know.
Yeah.
But... yeah, it's really good.
And that's something that, like, that evolving understanding of death is definitely something that as you get older
mm-hmm.
and you get, like, you live longer, but then you get closer to like the end. I mean, that's something that I think about all the time.
You feel less. I mean, when I first heard that song, I felt like I was like Superman at that. Like when I was like 19 or 20 years old, I could just do anything. Like I jumped on and off of a moving train with friends, and like we just did it because we wanted to do it. Like to say that we did it, we were gonna like ride to Oklahoma, and my girlfriend was gonna come pick us up and drive us back. Like, and then we realized we were gonna die. So we jumped off.
Oh my gosh.
While before it sped up. Like, you don't feel that death is going to ever happen when you're that age, you know?
You can hear lyrics like that.
And so songs like that affected me maybe even more because I hadn't really thought about it. Like, oh, I'm going to die. Like, whoa. You know?
Yeah.
Thanks, Paul. And Paul is like, he's probably like 30 when that album came out. So he was like right in the age where I am now, you know, mm-hmm. where I'm like, I get it now. You know?
It's true. But I see what you say about how you can kind of turn it into something good. I mean, not good, but it's like there's a freedom in accepting that like we're all going to die.
Yeah.
Like that is like the only given
yeah.
of that's our one commonality of all of humanity.
Right.
Like,
so like if
die.
You want to try to fill yourself up with something, like it needs to be like something that matters and not like paraphernalia or just like something shallow or substances, like, you know.
Yeah.
The song, it's a good song.
Call out the names of the world. Praise ye the souls, but nothing above, 'cause I'm not real. Even when you hear me here.
And below me you can hear Moonlight is Sunlight off P.T. Banks' new record of the same name. Lovely, right? And isn't it great how some songs can evolve with us? We hear them when we're 17 and they mean one thing, and then we hear them when we're 30 and they mean something else, but they're still terribly important. I'll post a link to P.T. Banks' live Studio NA performance, as well as to an interview that he did with our own Laurie Gallardo. She's been doing a ton of interviews lately and posting them to the KUTX website. They're really great to listen to. And again, we ended the conversation talking about death, which, I don't know, I'm 38. Like, I just want to talk about death all the time. Actually, in reality, we ended the conversation talking about Queen. It didn't quite fit for the purposes of this episode, but at one point, Paul talked about Queen being, like, the most talented band ever. We here at Team This Song are trying hard to figure out how to get these extra tidbits that don't make it into the episodes to you, the listener. So that will be coming soon. Also, as a new treat, we will soon have a Spotify playlist on the This Song page for this episode that has every song we reference in the podcast on the playlist. We know how frustrating it can be to only hear a part of a song, and now you can hear all the songs all the way through. And that's it. We have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9. The episode was produced and edited by David Sanger and me, Elizabeth McQueen. The Ian Astbury interview was recorded by David Alvarez, and the P.T. Banks interview was recorded by Cliff Hargrove. Thanks to Peter Babb and Deidre Gott and KUTX's fearless leader, Matt Riley, for all their help with the podcast. Antoinette Misando is our social media master, and I do mean master. And our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own excellent hard-proof Afrobeat. You can email us at thissong@kutx.org or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Snapchat. Our handle is @thissongkutx. You can follow us on Facebook
And you can subscribe to this song along with the other KTX podcasts, Liner Notes, Song of the Day, and Austin Music Minute on iTunes. And like I said before, we'd love a rating or a review. Right on. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.